earth in the sand, sharing her dreams with me, oh, I don't know anyone. And that was the band Fox Warren with the song Yvonne here on the Wednesday Morning Show. We receive support from the Blandon Foundation, strengthening rural Minnesota. More at blandonfoundation.org.
We'd like to thank Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
And we receive support from the Lake Country Journal, a magazine showcasing the beauty, landscapes, and people of Lake Country. The February-March issue publishes the winners of their annual photo contest, which are also displayed at the Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport. Submissions accepted all year round at lakecountryjournal.com.
This is 91.7 KAXC Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXC Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXC.org.
Now it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXC News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. The Minnesota Department of Health has confirmed 20 cases of West Nile virus so far this year. Of those 20 cases, two people have died. Citing the recent increase, health officials urge Minnesotans to take precautions. West Nile virus is transmitted to people through the bite of an infected mosquito. Less than 1% of people bitten by an infected mosquito develop encephalitis or meningitis, and symptoms usually show up within 1 to 2 weeks. Elderly patients and those with weakened immune systems are at greatest risk for severe disease, followed by people who work outside or participate in outdoor activities. The highest risk areas for West Nile include the agricultural regions of western and central Minnesota, but cases of West Nile virus disease have been found throughout the state. Precautions against mosquito bites include using insect repellents that contain up to 30% DEET, pre-treating clothing and gear with permethrin products, and being extra cautious at dawn and dusk, the peak feeding time for mosquitoes from July to September. Two citizens are suing Itasca County leadership over alleged federal civil rights violations. Megan Buffington has more.
At last week's county board meeting, former Commissioner Doug Carpenter served all five current commissioners, Attorney Jacob Fotchold and Administrator Brett Skiles. Auditor Treasurer Austin Rowling and Sheriff Joe Dasovich are also being sued. Here's Carpenter serving Commissioner Terry Snyder in ICTV's meeting recording.
And least of all, you've told me that I should do things properly, and here I am.
Thank you, Doug.
Here's your paper.
Robert Preble and John Casper allege that the leaders are violating the 1st, 4th, and 14th Amendments and the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act. They say the county has suppressed their negative public input, selectively enforced policies, failed to respond to data requests, and illegally prevented anonymous requests. Preble previously ran for county commissioner in two different districts. He addressed the board last week.
Let's be honest. This board has broken the trust of the very people it's sworn the oath to serve. For months, we submitted comments under your own policy, and you ignored them. We called, we emailed, we texted, and you would not respond.
Preble and Casper are asking the court to declare their rights have been violated, force the county to fulfill their data requests and offer anonymous comment, and to award compensatory damages. Administrator Skiles briefly addressed the comments, which he says he doesn't often do.
And I certainly won't respond to all the inaccuracies presented today.
I would just point
and see, look at this. I can't even get through one. I listened to his, what I would describe as character assassination, and
Robert
he speaks
Rule
out from the order. It's my floor right now. But I would just advise or invite any citizen who would like to have honest answers on those questions, please feel free to send me an email. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Public information.
Commissioner Larry Hopkins said he appreciated Preble and two others for presenting public input because it doesn't happen often. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
Around $7 billion in federal education funds will be restored after a multi-state lawsuit over the Trump administration's decision to freeze the funds in June. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison joined more than 20 other states in suing the administration, calling the funding freezes on six longstanding programs, quote, unconstitutional, unlawful, and arbitrary. On Tuesday, Ellison announced that the lawsuit will be dismissed, with stipulations that the remaining funds would be released by October 3rd. Most of the $74 million in education funds frozen in Minnesota were released by July 25th. Minnesota and other states have used these federal education funds for after-school and summer learning programs, programs for migrant and English as a second language learners, and teacher training. Construction on Highway 53 for the Eveleth and Rock Ridge transportation improvements is making progress, with the project expected to be complete in October. Beginning Wednesday, traffic will be moved back onto Highway 53 off of the detour route. Drivers can expect lane shifts and areas of head-to-head traffic. The roundabout at Progress Parkway will also open Wednesday, providing access to the schools ahead of the start of classes. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
And you're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show here on KAXE KBXE. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with DJ Dang. And coming up in a little bit, we're going to hear more from Morning Edition talking about the U.S. House redistricting impact and Indiana lawmaker on redistricting. They'll be coming up in just a bit.
We receive support from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. Move at moveitrealestate.com.
We receive support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering workshops in September, preparing for Fall Colors, a two-session photography workshop, September 13th and 20th at Itasca State Park, and Oils Made Easy, September 24th through the 26th in Park Rapids. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook.
Weather in the listening area today, slight chance of showers with thunderstorms, mostly partly sunny, highs near 80, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-50s. And Thursday, looking like another gorgeous one, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-70s. Overnight temps in the high 40s, low 50s. And Friday, more of the same, mostly sunny with highs 71 to 76. Our KAXE question of the week is, what were your favorite books to read as a child? You can text us at 218-326-1234.
And now it's time for more from Morning Edition. Morning Edition. Morning Edition. Morning Edition. In addition.
Lines ahead of the midterms has triggered a redistricting arms race. More states are expected to follow as control of the House in 2026 comes down to just a few seats. In a few minutes, we'll talk to a Republican state representative in Indiana pushing for new maps that would make it harder for Democrats to get elected there. But first, NPR congressional correspondent Deirdre Walsh reports that mid-decade gerrymandering doesn't only affect voters. It could also further erode the constitutional power of the People's House.
Republican Congressman Kevin Kiley's district runs along most of California's border with Nevada. But under a new map drawn by Democrats, it won't exist anymore.
It's going to be incredibly disruptive for representative government in our state.
Kiley says voters want legislators who know their districts inside and out.
I mean, if just all of a sudden you have communities tossed out of your district that you've come to know, they've come to know you, you understand their issues.
He says it only increases polarization.
We disagree on enough as it is, but if we can't agree on the basic rules of the road, the rules of the game, the basic parameters of our politics, then we're really in big trouble.
Kiley is one of five Republicans who could be out of a job if voters in California approve the new map. Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom pushed the changes to respond to the move by Texas Republicans to redraw their maps in a way that would cost five Democrats their seats. Sean Trendy, an elections analyst with Real Clear Politics, says this opens the door to a never-ending redistricting loop.
You know, in this current nasty polarized environment, you can see that, like, parties draw the map and then one of their incumbents looks kind of wobbly, and so they redraw it to shore that member up.
Trendy says this could result in a non-functional House, because with fewer swing districts, there will be fewer moderates with incentives to reach across the aisle.
It almost compounds things when you have these super safe seats, because you have members who have just zero interest in even taking like an 18th of a loaf.
The House was designed to be closest to the people, but more partisan districts increases gridlock, which Trendy says ends up shifting power to the executive and judicial branches.
So it really is a movement away from what's supposed to be our most responsive democratic branches to the more unelected branches who are more insulated from public opinion.
While blue California and red Texas have already jumped into the redistricting game, they won't be the last. Ohio was already planning to redraw its lines. Republicans in Indiana and Missouri could follow suit, and potentially Florida too. A judge just threw out Utah's map, so the GOP is facing a challenge to redraw lines there. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries blames President Trump for the frenzy.
They started it, but we're not going to let them finish it.
Democrats need to pick up four seats to win back the House and block Trump's agenda. To do so, Jeffries told NPR, Democrats are going to take the redistricting fight coast to coast. Blue states like Maryland, Illinois, and maybe Oregon could move to counter GOP gains.
Republicans are trying to shrink the map, and we are not going to let that happen.
The top House Democrat says the GOP turned to redistricting as a way to keep their majority, because the president's agenda is broadly unpopular.
It's because they have failed to govern in a manner that makes life better for the American people.
Lawmakers on both sides say the way to end the redistricting fever is to ban states from redrawing lines mid-decade and to hand the power to independent commissions. But no one believes either of those things will happen soon. And without reform, the doom loop of redistricting and polarization will just keep spinning. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News, Washington.
Okay, Deirdre mentioned my home state of Indiana, which is one of the states where Republicans are talking of redrawing congressional district lines, although they seem to be divided on that question. Dozens of Republican lawmakers from Indiana visited the White House yesterday, and their meeting touched on redistricting. One of them was Republican State Representative Andrew Ireland, who represents some of the outlying areas of Indianapolis, the capital. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hi, good morning. Good to be with you.
Glad you're with us. Now, I just want to do a little bit of math here. During Trump's time, the last decade or so, Indiana has been roughly a 60-40 state, about 60% Republican. In Congress, you've got 7 of 9 Republican seats already, which is way more than 60% Republican. And the idea is to make it even more Republican, maybe unanimously Republican. Do you really want to make it 9 out of 9?
Well, listen, I think that there's a strategic disadvantage at the national level for Republicans in Congress because of, you know, partisan gerrymandering in other states like our neighbor Illinois. And right now we have a leader in our party that I think is, you know, recognized that, you know, issue. And, you know, we can sit on our laurels and say that, you know, we have this map that, you know, the Princeton Election Lab, for example, rates as one of the least gerrymandered in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, we can get in the fight and we can level the playing field. And I think that's the conversation we're having now.
Okay, you're making an argument, as Democrats are, that the other guys are doing it more. But I want to focus just for a moment on the state of Indiana. You were quoted as saying Democrats, quote, have no business representing us in Washington. Is that a thing you said?
That's right. And I'll say that because, you know, you look at Indiana and the political makeup, yes, we're 60-40, but also Democrats have not won over the average Hoosier in a statewide vote for more than a decade in a single office. I think that says a lot about where the party is, that it no longer connects with the average Hoosier voter. There's something to be said that we should have congressional maps that, one, reflect the average Hoosier voter. They don't, you know, really kind of swing hard to one party or another, but actually just swing to the basic average within the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then if Democrats can't win that, I mean, that's on Democrats and the fact that they're not focusing on policies and issues that matter.
Although I was looking at those recent elections, and you're right, Republicans have won big in this era in Indiana. Previous decades, they did better. Democrats did better, but Republicans are dominant now. And yet it would seem that more than a million Hoosiers disagree with you, because that's the number that voted for Democrats for president or for governor in 2024, well over a million. That would include a majority of people in Indianapolis, the city you represent. Are you dismissing the wishes of your own constituents?
No, I'm not. And I'll say, I mean, too, take Massachusetts, for example. It is also has 9 congressional seats. The political makeup is almost exactly the same, 60-40, but mm-hmm. Democrats or Republicans. But in Massachusetts, the same for all of New England, is entirely a Democrat congressional delegation. Indiana, you know, again, if you're going to level the playing field, and we're going to play, you know, by a system that really evens out the kind of the partisan split in Congress, I don't think there's anything then wrong for Indiana to take a similar approach.
I think you can make the case about Massachusetts, and I think about that sometimes. If you're a Massachusetts Republican, it's got to be very, very frustrating. But it sounds like you want the same thing for Indiana.
Well, and I'll tell you this, too. I mean, candidly, I would like to see a world where Congress steps in and does its job to rein in partisan gerrymandering. But until Congress does its job, I think states have an obligation to really protect the interests of the majority, and in particular, you know, in aggregate, the national scale. And right now, you know, candidly, states like Indiana have kind of sat by and said, even though Illinois is doing this, even though California, Maryland, other states, that we're going to sit back and try to do it the right way. And I respect that. I think there's something to be said for that. But at the same time, you can't put your partisan, you know, kind of in, I think, at a strategic disadvantage on a national level and really marginalize your own voters in the process.
You know, I do have to mention there are a number of Democratic-led states where they've put these nonpartisan processes in place. In fact, California is one. That's what they're now backing out of in response to the redistricting in Texas. It's not like Democrats have made no effort in this side. But I'm just thinking this through. If Democrats should win one election in Indiana, which I grant is unlikely now, should they have the right to just shut you out of power forever?
Well, let me push back first on saying that, you know, we have these nonpartisan commissions, and yes, they're nonpartisan in name, but I think if you look at the political affiliation of the individuals that staff them, rarely are they truly nonpartisan. But I will say, yeah, of course, you know, if Democrats win elections in Indiana, then, you know, they are given the constitutional right to draw maps. And again, I would encourage them to really focus on issues that matter to Hoosiers. And maybe they would have a little more luck at the ballot box, but they really haven't. They're out of touch with the average voter, and that's why they're in the predicament they're in now.
Indiana State Representative Andrew Ireland, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Scientists have documented a new shark, and it's orange.
What?
I have never seen a nurse shark with that color.
Daniela Rouse co-authored a study on the shark published in the journal Marine Biodiversity. Rouse says the 6-foot-long shark was caught by a group of sport fishermen off Costa Rica and released.
These guys took a bunch of pictures of the shark. You know, they are usually yellowish, grayish, but that was like bright orange and was like almost like golden. It was crazy. And it also had these white eyes.
Arouse is executive director of the Rescue Center for Endangered Marine Species, which is an NGO based in Costa Rica. He says the color, which was kind of like a goldfish, a really big goldfish, comes from a rare genetic mutation.
This is a chromatism mutation. It's similar to what you will call albino animals, right? Or melanistic animals. In this case, it's called xanthism with an X.
Xanthism in other animals causes the bright yellowish pigmentation in fish and frogs, even some snakes.
In this case, Arouse says it's particularly rare.
This shark actually has both mutations. It has a mutation for albinism, which is why the eyes are all white, and it also has a mutation for xanthism. We have never seen that in a shark before.
Nick Whitney, a senior scientist for the New England Aquarium, specializes in nurse shark research.
It's cool to see. It's incredibly rare. We now know that this can happen. We have a really good photo documentation of it.
Although he wasn't involved in the study, Whitney thinks the 6-foot-long shark seems to be doing swimmingly.
As far as the shark is concerned, it probably has no idea that it's yellow. And this one seemed to be a healthy, probably newly mature adult.
The shark has grown out of the phase when being camouflaged was most important.
In those early years of life, being yellow like that may have made it stand out more, but it seems to have survived that just fine.
Now it's kind of too big to mess with.
And it was all yellow.
This is NPR News.
That's right. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with DJ Dang. And we were talking about Rush earlier. It's Alex Lifeson's.
Are you sure we're not on KQ92, the rock station that brings you all the best rock from all over the world?
And Dan mentioned that he's not a big Rush guy.
But yeah, you're twisting it a little bit. I said I don't... Yeah, okay, fair. I'm not a big Rush guy.
But we heard from at least one defender, our very own Brandon Chase, Green Cheese host extraordinaire. I love Rush. 2112 was one of my favorite albums.
It was a big one. That was a big one.
So thank you, Brandon, for texting in.
What does Geddy Lee even say in the beginning of that song? Today's Tom Sawyer, me, mine. Like, yeah, what are those words?
I was like, complain about words.
I was like, how is this Tom Sawyer? How is this tie into Tom Sawyer? I think I've forever been trying to figure that out. I'm like, is Rush on a raft going down a river? Is Rush getting other people to paint their picket fences for them? Like, what's...
I don't know. It's a modern Tom Sawyer.
Me, mine.
He's going to play Space Invaders later. I know Space Invaders is a line in that song.
Okay. I'm going to look up the lyrics.
So if you're a Rush fan, text us at 218-326-1234. Maybe you can convince DJ Dang of their artistic merit because he's complaining about lyrics in songs now, I guess.
I guess. Like, that's a thing. Like, people don't like some lyrics. How dare me?
Lyrics aren't as big for me as... for other people, because I really don't know what most songs are. Like, I couldn't recite lyrics to you for a lot of songs.
I don't believe that. You do karaoke in our office every day. You did it this morning already.
I did?
Yeah.
Well.
So you know
the
lyrics.
Yeah, but I don't know if I said the right words.
Oh, you just make them up?
Yeah. No one knows the difference. If you say something confident enough, everyone will believe you.
That's half true, yes.
So... that's DJ Dang. I'm Andrew DeZingle. We're here until 9 o'clock. Now we're going to hand things over to Kari Hedlund for Headwaters, and she's going to have a special conversation with Alan Sparhawk, who will be opening up Grand Rapids Air Fest September 6th. That'll be Get Your Tickets Now for the show. It's going to be quite the day. It's quite the day of music.
I saw a video of Margot Price doing Maggie's Farm.
Oh.
With Jesse Wells. I think it was the Newport Folk Festival. And it made me very excited to see Margot Price at Grand Rapids River Fest on September 6th.
Well, I'm also curious because she has a new album that's coming out. Is it next week already?
Mm-hmm.
Is it on Tuesday it comes out?
I don't know the exact day.
So I'm curious how much, like, is she going to play the full new album already?
I would imagine she's going to play a good chunk of it, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to hear. One of the first stops on the tour, I bet them.
She's got quite a back catalog. I mean, she could probably play a 2-hour set, easy peasy.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how long she'll be going at Riverfest, probably an hour and 15 minutes, maybe an hour and a half. I don't know. Usually we don't do sets that are an hour and a half long. So, but she'll be bringing it.
Yeah. So get your tickets at GrandRapidsRiverFest.org. And if you want to volunteer, you can also go to GrandRapidsRiverFest.org and select Get Involved.
Indeed.
So we have our question of the week. What was your favorite books to read as a child? You can text us at 218-326-1234. Dang, I told you to think about it for a while. You already had an answer before I was even done talking.
It's a little bit cringy because it's so sort of suburbia, like middle class white suburbia. But I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago and was fanatical about the Hardy Boys books.
Oh.
So I probably had 50, 60, I don't know how many are in the series, but just a long line of blue books. They're all colored blue. They're all on my bookshelf.
Oh,
in my
bedroom. You had them. You mm-hmm. had the copies. Wow.
Yeah, well, yeah, this would have been the 1970s, so there was no downloading them. There was no...
Yeah, but I would like you could check them out at the library or something.
Probably could have, but I think our town library was like a pretty far bike ride away because it was kind of a spread out town, so... And we just bought them.
What was it about the Hardy Boys that seemed to capture a young Dan's imagination?
Well, they had their own little, like, garage shop where they would solve many of the mysteries. Like, they'd go back to the garage, and our garage was not like a garage shop where you could solve mysteries. So it made me think, or maybe, yeah, sort of imagine what that would be like to have a cool garage where you could solve mysteries.
What's your thoughts on their friend Chet?
Boy, I don't even remember. How the heck? What? Chet.
Yeah, that's the only other character I remember from the Hardy Boys.
What was his deal?
He was like their friend. And he would always like sort of help them.
Was he like a bonehead, like a good guy or a bad guy?
He was like a good guy.
Doofus?
He was, I don't know if doofus is the right word. It was just kind of like, oh, Chet. But he would say something and be like, wait a minute. That makes us think of this other thing.
That gum on the bottom of his shoe. I know where that gum comes from.
Exactly.
It was Mr. Roberts.
Yeah, that's kind of Chet's role in the books.
Right. Yeah, no, I completely. It's been a few decades since I picked up a Hardy Boys.
Yeah, but how
book.
Do you forget Chet?
But after the Hardy Boys, more when I was in my teens, I got into Stephen King. That was a pretty good switch.
I've only read one Stephen King book.
Yeah.
Do you think you could guess it? Famous movie adaptation.
Carrie.
No.
Oh, the hotel one?
No.
Which I'm blanking on the name.
Shining?
Yeah, The Shining.
No, it was Misery. That's the only one I've
read. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd stopped reading Stephen King by the time Misery came out because it felt like it was getting a little too predictable. But I kind of want to go back to reading Stephen King. A friend just posted about the Dark Tower series and said it was really good. Mosey of Foxby, who's playing this Saturday.
It was also adapted into a comic book for a while in Marvel Comics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So for me, my childhood book that I remember off the top of my head is Tacky the Penguin. And it was about this penguin that was wearing like big, like flowery shirt and a big purple bow tie.
Like he was a tacky dresser.
Yeah.
Tacky the
Penguin. And he had his like own book? Theme song. Yeah. You can look at the picture.
Wait a minute, theme song. How do you have a theme song in a
it was
book?
Like, Tacky the Penguin.
You're just making that up.
That's... Well, my mom made it up, but.
That's Frosty the Snowman.
Well, whatever.
You guys are doing weird stuff out there.
But I remember in elementary school, they had to dress up like a book character day. And I dressed up like Tacky the Penguin. So I wore like a Hawaiian shirt. And then they had like a big cardboard like penguin stomach. And then had like a bill on my mouth.
Did you feel like a star?
Well, no one knew the book.
I was going to say no one knew who Tacky the Penguin was.
But at our house, Tacky the Penguin is as big of a celebrity as you can get.
This sounds like the kind of book you'd read when you're like just learned how to read when you're six or something.
Well, it says books you enjoyed reading as a child. It doesn't say what age.
And there was a series?
There was at least three. Tacky
or was it like one of those toddler books that you could chew on?
No, it wasn't a chew-on book.
No?
But I guess if we're talking about like chapter books, I don't really... A Wrinkle in Time, I enjoyed that.
Oh, okay.
I got in trouble because we had to read A Wrinkle in Time as part of like our school assignments.
Mm-hmm.
And we were split up into groups. And part of it was like, okay, look up, if there's any word you don't understand in the book, write it down and then look it up in the dictionary to figure out what it is. So you learn new words or whatever.
Yeah.
And the person in my group clearly hadn't read the book because they wrote down as one of the words they didn't understand. They must have skimmed through it. And then saw one, and it was the name of a planet in the book. So they're like, I don't know the meaning of this word. And I'm like, well, if you read it, it's the name of the planet in the book. And I must have said it loud enough that our teacher was like, why are you yelling at your fellow student? And I'm like, they didn't read the book.
Oh, Andrew. Yeah. I bet that made you a lot of friends.
Well, it's just like, well, what are we doing here?
This is school. Everyone should have done the assignment.
Well, it's not hard to read the two chapters or whatever it was. It just made me so mad.
I had, speaking of big words, I had, when I was coaching yesterday, I said to one of my players, like, you don't need to defer to this other player. And then they just looked at me blankly. I'm like, do you know what defer means? And they're like, nope. I didn't think it was that fancy of a word. I was like, you're always sort of giving them the ball when you don't need to always give them the ball. You can make something happen on your own.
Mm-hmm. So let us know, what favorite books did you read as a child? Text 218-326-1234. I got to admit, I'm surprised Hardy Boys was your pick, Dan.
I used to be a clean-cut good boy.
All right, now it's time for From the Vault, where we play something from the KBXE vinyl library as a way to encourage our volunteers here at the station to go back in the vinyl library back there and pick out some records.
You're going to have to grab the jacket because I don't even know the name of the band.
what do you got for us today?
I think the band is called Sharati Jazz, and they're from Kenya.
Yep.
And
the album's called Benga Beat.
Yep, Benga Beat. And each song has a description of the song. So there's a song called Rosie and Penzi, and it says, Rosie has broken too many hearts, so now it's her turn, because nobody wants to get involved with her. Very sad. But I picked one called John Otieno, And it says, John is a successful furniture store owner. The song praises his contribution to society, especially his bed making.
All right, here we go. What was that, DJ Dang?
We heard John Otieno by Shirati Jazz out of Kenya. I love that, like, percolating rhythm section with that really bright guitar sound. They said on the album, it says that Benga beat is a type of music originating in Kenya on the shores of Lake Victoria. It happened in the late 60s as a reaction against the colonization of the African music scene by Congolese music.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that tune.
It's interesting. So that song praised a furniture store owner that they know, and they praise his contribution to society, especially his bed making. And like, we should have more songs like that. Like, bands should be like, hey, local fixer of things.
The plumber.
Totally. 100% should have songs honoring the plumbers.
All right. That was from The Vault, where we play something from the KBXE vinyl library. Now it's time for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, August 27th.
Happy anniversary to Maria and Dave Kinney. It's their 37th anniversary of Bemidji. And I've been going on a bunch of bike rides with Dave Kinney this summer. And he can really ride that bike. And also happy 5th anniversary to Billy Shaw and Chelsea Ruda. Happy 67th birthday to John Bauer. I believe we know that guy. KXC's John Bauer. Happy birthday, John. And happy 72nd birthday to Pete Bauer. And Roland Root, it's your birthday today. Happy birthday. And Roland is from Hibbing.
And we want to wish a happy birthday to Melissa Roach of Bear River, turning 50 today. And Dan Haskin, celebrating a birthday today in Aitkin, turning 57. Jan Noer from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It's Kari Hedlund's mom, celebrating 75th birthday today. Happy birthday. And Pam Peterson of Grand Rapids, celebrating their 77th birthday today. Happy birthday and happy anniversary to everyone. And in celebration, we're going to play a tune for you. This is a new one from You Know. This song is called Blessed.
Baby, don't you know that we can do it to the mouth and work it out? Baby, I've been feeling like I'm dreaming now that I got you around. I play it easy, I just wait for you to make a move. So put a label on it, baby, we don't have to choose. I know you feel it, boy, I got this feeling in my chest. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Feeling less, it's the end. Maybe I know you're feeling, feeling less. No, I mean it.
That is You Know with the song Blessed here on the Wednesday Morning Show. And if you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234.
We received support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industry since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward.
And we receive support from the Bonner Eye Clinic, with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
We got a message from listener Sonny Johnson about what books did you read growing up, and Sonny read the Junie B. Jones series. Sonny said that was his go-to. That definitely was around. I think that's a much cooler answer than Hardy Boys. Junie B. Jones, she was pretty bad, man.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think we read a bunch of Junie B. Jones books, but I can't remember which ones. Oh, yep. Yeah. So, yeah, our first grade teacher would read these books to us during class.
Okay.
Did you have that in elementary school where it was just like the teacher just read from a book to the class?
We must have, but I don't really remember. Like, nothing stands out. There's not in my brain. There's not like, oh, and this time when this teacher read a book. But I would imagine it happened. I don't have a distinct recollection, though.
I remember Junie B. Jones was a big one. And then Hank the Cow Dog was another series.
Where did you get these books from? What was the penguin's name?
Tacky
the penguin and Hank the Cow Dog?
Yeah.
I think just people in your community made these books up, and you're like, Mom, why is this book on old painted over newspaper? It's because your neighbor made it, son.
Well, they're real, and they were great. So coming up in a bit, we're going to hear more from Morning Edition talking about U.S. buys Russian fertilizer and international students arriving. And in about an hour, we're also going to have my Area Voices, my conversation with two artists that are featured at the Namath Art Center in Park Rapids. As for things going on in our area, the next Summer Muse Festival is Saturday, August 30th from 4 to 8 at Railroad Folk School in Bemidji, with artists, musicians, food vendors, and more. And the Friends of Lake Bemidji State Park have a pancake breakfast Sunday, August 31st from 8 to 10 at the park's dining hall. Bring plates and utensils to help the environment. Now we're going to hear more from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. Why would it be in 2025 that the United States is still buying fertilizer from Russia? Russia's war on Ukraine prompted countries to hit Moscow with economic sanctions and trade restrictions, it seems. But many of those same countries are still importing Russian products. NPR's H.J. Mai reports.
When Iowa farmer Josh Mansky sprays fertilizer on his fields of soybeans and corn, he knows that the product he uses might be imported from Russia.
I know there's stuff that's sourced from over in Russia.
Mansky, who manages almost 2,000 acres of farmland in Iowa and Minnesota, says it's not something he takes lightly.
I certainly don't want to pad Vladimir Putin's pockets in any way, shape, or form. And with what he's done to the people of Ukraine, that's not something that sits well with me.
But his options are limited, especially at a time when farmers in the U.S. are facing increased financial pressures, brought on by the Trump administration's trade war and inflation. Josh Linville says if the federal government were to impose sanctions on Russian fertilizers, it would be a blow to American farmers and consumers.
I dare say it would be devastating.
Linville is the vice president of fertilizer at the financial services company StoneX. He says Russia dominates the industry in nitrogen-based fertilizers like UAN, commonly used for crops like corn, wheat, or rice.
The U.S. imports a little bit over 2 million ton a year. A million ton of that comes from Russia.
And there's no real alternative, he says. Russia benefits from an abundance of cheap natural gas, which is a key ingredient in fertilizer production. Fertilizers are, of course, not the only product the U.S. imports from Russia. Other prominent examples are critical metals, such as uranium and palladium. Palladium is relied on by the auto industry. It's a similar picture over in Europe, where EU countries still imported around $41 billion in Russian goods in 2024. Isaac Levy is a Europe-Russia policy expert at the Center for Research on Energy and Clean Air.
In the third year of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the EU sent more money for the imports of fossil fuels to Russia than aid provided to Ukraine.
He criticizes European leaders for not doing more to cut ties with Russia on fossil fuels.
There is a lack of political will and a lack of desire to fully ban the imports of Russian fossil fuels.
The EU has passed 18 sanctions packages since 2022. But because of Europe's dependency on Russian gas, a ban on gas imports has been elusive. EU countries spent more than $8 billion on imports of Russian liquefied natural gas, or LNG, during the third year of the full-scale invasion.
Spain is probably a country that feels quite far away from the war in Ukraine and doesn't feel so threatened by a potential Russian invasion. And therefore, they, for example, have increased imports of Russian LNG.
While the EU has seen a 9% year-over-year increase in the volume of LNG imports, it has so far avoided President Trump's wrath. Unlike India, which faces an extra 25% tariff specifically for importing Russian oil.
This, to some extent, is being used as leverage to try and push through a more successful or favorable trade deal between the United States of America and India.
This dichotomy of countries sending billions of dollars in aid to Ukraine, while also helping bankroll Russia's wartime economy, shows the limitations of economic sanctions, says economist Elina Rybakova.
We've sort of misplaced our hopes on sanctions a bit, that they're going to resolve everything. Long story short, when you're trying to sanction a globally highly integrated economy, which is also a dominant player in some markets, then it makes it very difficult.
Rybakova, who is with the Peterson Institute for International Economics, says in the case of Russia, this means the countries doing the sanctioning must be willing to bear some of the cost. Iowa farmer Josh Mansky says he would love to see Russia get out of Ukraine.
But in the same breath, we can't handle any more price increases. I mean, we just can't handle
them. HJMI, NPR News, Washington.
International students are arriving on American college campuses.
Hi, I'm Daria. I'm a first-year international student, and I'm from Romania.
Priyota Nath, and I'm from Bangladesh.
My name is Francho Humphries. I'm from South Africa.
My name is Shivika, and I'm from India.
Those students made it to school in Buffalo, New York, after a rocky summer when the Trump administration temporarily paused and then revamped student visa interviews. NPR's Alyssa Nadworny reports from Buffalo.
Welcome. We're so excited that you're here on campus.
At orientation at the University at Buffalo, a public research university in Western New York, newly arrived international students are getting their campus IDs.
So just smile. I'm going to take it on three. One, two, three.
And feeling relieved they made it to campus.
At least we're here. For me, the main thing is that I got here.
Daria Tofan from Romania didn't get her student visa until a week before orientation.
To get scheduled for classes, you need to provide the immigration documents. So if you don't have the visa stamp, you're basically behind everything.
Over the last 6 months, the Trump administration has clamped down on international student visas. That's created lots of delays and anxiety for accepted students.
I only had one goal from the beginning. It was to go to college here. So if I didn't reach that goal, it would have been very painful.
Shivika Singh is from New Delhi, starting as a freshman at UB to study psychology. When she first got accepted to Buffalo, she joined a group chat of other students from India. Many of them couldn't get a visa appointment in time.
Most of them are now transferring to UK because of the visa situation, but some are still waiting for the spring semester.
Clearly this year we're having more deferrals. They haven't been able to get appointments for the most part.
Scott Weber is the provost at the University at Buffalo. The university is expecting a decline of about 750 international students this fall, many in graduate programs, especially in the STEM fields.
The loss of international students will lead to really a significant downturn in innovation.
Fanta Ah leads the Association of International Educators. She says universities all over the country are expecting similar drops. Last year, more than 1 million international students studied in the U.S., but Ah's organization estimates a decline of about 15% overall this fall.
This will affect communities, large and small.
Other countries like Canada, the U.K., and South Korea have stepped up to fill the gap. President Trump has said he wants to keep campuses safe, citing threats of academic espionage, support for terrorist groups in Gaza, and criminal behavior, all without much evidence. He's also accused international students of taking university spots that could go to American citizens. Provost Scott Weber says there's room for everyone at his university.
I would assure you that our international students do not take spots, you know, for other students who are qualified to attend and would be successful here.
Enrollment is actually up at the university overall. And there are still about 4,000 international students on campus this year.
What they bring to the university is this incredibly rich, diverse cultural experience for students who may not have ever been outside of New York State.
For the lucky ones, like Shivika Singh from New Delhi, now it's time to focus on being a college student.
What's the most exciting thing you bought for your dorm?
I bought a pink Lilo and Stitch soft toy.
A toy?
Yeah.
To sleep with?
Yeah, there are like three soft toys on my bed.
She says those stuffed animals are the key to warding off homesickness that comes from being 7,000 miles from home. Alyssa Nadworny, NPR News, Buffalo, New York.
This is NPR News.
You are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show here on KAXE, KBXE, People Power Radio. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm here with DJ Dang.
Good morning. Support comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, offering technology for businesses like SmartBiz, Managed Voice, and Wi-Fi services, security cameras, and more. Online at paulbunyan.net, Paul Bunyan Communications, it's right here.
And now a message paid for by the Minnesota Department of Health. Sometimes you just need to talk about it, but it can be hard to find someone who really listens. That's why there is 988, with support that meets you where you are. Confidential and staffed by trained folks who want to help when you need someone to talk to. Call or text 988 or chat online at 988lifeline.org. And we were talking about books you read as a child, and we heard from Corrine, The Adventures of Chatterer the Red Squirrel. My dad read a chapter every night before bed, imitating the chattering sound. To this day, when I hear the character chatter of a red squirrel, I fondly recall this.
Chatter the Red Squirrel had to be a friend of Tacky the Penguins. And who was the other one?
Hank the Cowdog.
Hank the Cowdog. How do they not have their own show?
I don't know why Hank the Cowdog wouldn't have one. Like, the boys in our class, they absolutely loved Hank the Cowdog. And there was a huge series of books.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, you grew up in a farming community, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So that would hit. That would hit without a doubt.
So let us know, what childhood book did you read? Text 218-326-1234. Another one I remember my mom reading to me was, I forget what it's called, but it was just like a kid going to the zoo and things just keep happening to him and be like, oh no, that's bad. Oh no, that's good.
Oh.
That was always the end of the page kind of thing. Yeah. Depending on what the situation was.
That rings a vague bell.
Where you like, get lifted up by a red balloon. Oh no, that's bad. Oh no, that's good.
Wasn't that the getting lifted up by the red balloon? That was the, what was the monkey and the guy in the yellow hat?
Oh, Curious George?
Curious George.
Yeah, this wasn't Curious George.
Okay. Because that had a, he came from a zoo as well. You sure you're not getting it mixed up?
Did he come from a zoo?
Yeah.
Oh. No, I'm definitely not mixing up. I could draw a picture of this book to you. I remember it so well.
You know, the book Curious George, the author of that book was a French author, and he escaped the Nazis on his bicycle with the original manuscript of that book before it got printed, so it hadn't become a book yet. And when he escaped the Nazis, that was one of the things he took with him. And then that book got published.
I never knew that.
Yeah, it's super cool.
So text us at 218-326 about what books you read as a kid. And as we're wrapping up August this month, that means September is just next week. And what's going on in September, DJ Dang?
What's going on in September? Soccer. The time. Oh, yeah. It's a month full of soccer.
No, I'm talking about Grand Rapids River Fest.
September 6th. Margot yes. Price, Courtney Barnett, Jeremy Albino, Alan Sparhawk from Lowe, probably with some Trampled by Turtles folks jumping on the stage with them.
You think so?
That's the rumor. Oh. Nothing's confirmed. We'll see.
So tickets and info are at GrandRapidsRiverFest.com. Want to volunteer at the event? You can also go to GrandRapidsRiverFest.com under Get Involved. And DJ Dang, you're kind of in charge of that. So what's the protocol of volunteering?
Well, you got to go to the, you know, click on the Get Involved tab, and that will take you to the United Way 1000 Lakes site, and that will direct you to Grand Rapids River Fest, and then you kind of just select a time that works best for you and a job that you want to do that's available. And like I said earlier, off the top of my head, I can't run down all the jobs that are available. I know right now grounds crew is a big one, but you'll get a heavily discounted ticket to get into the festival for the day. And we have close to 100 volunteers that help make that event run so smoothly. Like, it's incredible. We set up Friday night, tear down somewhat Saturday night after the show, and then Sunday morning we're back over there finishing with cleanup, and we have over 100 volunteers helping with all the different aspects of making the festival sort of a kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but like behind the scenes, right? It's sort of like the thing that makes the whole festival run is the volunteers we have. So
yeah, and I've been part of the Sunday cleanup crew, and when there's so many people that are helping the day before with cleanup and then on Sunday, it's a pretty breezy breezy gig.
Yeah, yeah, it's a classic many hands make light work statement is the reality of how we organize the volunteers at Riverfest. And it's also fun. Like, almost everyone's just having a good time doing their volunteering job, and then they get to enjoy the festival.
Yeah, and it's helping out the station here. We recently had some funds rescinded, and a big thing that can help us out is going to Grand Rapids Riverfest. That's an event we put on, so show your support by getting a ticket right now.
It's always a great day. It's so much fun. Like, the vibe is so great. And there's kids running around all over the place, like people of all ages. So, yeah, get your tickets for Grand Rapids Riverfest September 6th. Courtney Barnett, Margot Price, Jeremy Albino, and Alan Sparhawk. What do you got over there, Andrew?
I've got Jeremy Albino. We're going to hear from him. This is from his EP that came out in 2022. This EP is called Past Dawn. The song is called The Night Was Young.
1, 2. 1, 2, 3, go!
Oh, the night was young, and it came from miles around. Now everybody's gathering at the bar. And I walk up to the rail, lean over just to say, now it's been a week, tell me, have you seen that gal? But I lost her number. She told me to call. Said her name was Caroline. She knew some of my friends. And old Gus at the bar said, you two sure get along.
And that was Jeremy Albino with The Night Was Young. Jeremy Albino will be at Grand Rapids River Fest September 6th, along with Courtney Barnett, Margot Price, and Alan Sparhawk. And in about an hour, it's going to be Headwaters, and Kari Hedlund's going to have an interview with Alan Sparhawk this morning on Headwaters. You'll want to check that out. Get your tickets at grandrapidsriverfest.org. And we were talking about favorite childhood books